I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to the Featured Anime Podcast. I'm your host, Jack.
And I'm Rick.
And today we have a very special guest with us, CJ from Anime Anonymous. He is also one of the few people that's willing to put up with us and all the shenanigans as well. But CJ, go ahead and introduce yourself to those who have not heard you introduce yourself before on the many a times that you have actually showed up on our podcast.
Sure. Hi, my name is CJ. I am one half of Anime Anonymous. Short version, love anime, love movies, all that jazz. And if you guys ever want to join on a stream, then you can follow me on Twitch. So yeah, that's it.
And I'm perfect. What would your Twitch be, sir?
Oh yeah, I should probably say that, right? twitch.tv/crazyjam.
There you go, right on. Yeah. Thank you. Much appreciated, sir. If you want to hear some of the banter and fun that we've had before all of this, you can check us out on our Patreon, patreon.com/featuredanimepodcast. $1 a month will gain you access to bonus content. And if you feel so inclined to also follow us and join us live, we are on twitch.tv/featuredanimepodcast. We are live on Mondays, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, if you want to come and join us. Before we dive into this week's choice with a very special guest, I want to take a moment and talk to you all about Tokyo Treat. Now, Tokyo Treat is a monthly pop Japanese snack box subscription service where you will get up to 20 of the most exclusive limited edition and seasonally flavored snacks from Japan. And these are snacks that are only available in Japan for a limited time. So it's not like you can just go down to 7-Eleven or anything like that and buy one of these things. No, these are available in Japan and they're a limited time. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Jack, is it some random person just going into a store, throwing things in a box and shipping them out to me? Is that what's really going on? And the answer to that question is no. Honestly, every single month is themed. And I love it too. Every box is themed every single month. And it is really, really cool because not only do you get a nice themed box, but you get some really delicious treats. Now, this month's theme is Snack Adventure. So why not adventure into Japan's most elusive and mysterious world of ninjas than with this month's Tokyo Treat box, which is packed full of sneaky surprises of savory and sweet ninja-inspired treats. Explore the thrilling history and hidden flavors only found in this month's box, and trust me, you will not be disappointed. In this box, you have wonderful treats like the chocolate orange Kit Kat, you have the katana candy sword, the strawberry dorayaki, and then also on top of that, one of my favorite treats, even though I'm a real sweet tooth kind of guy, I love the kabuki wasabi rice crackers, and those were really delicious. Honestly, I could go back for more, but unfortunately, I ate them all. And you know what? And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking like, Jack, but I have allergies, man. I can't eat, you know, some things, you know, I can't read Japanese. And it's like, hey, you know what? I got you. All right. I can't read Japanese either, but you know what? That booklet I was telling you about, that booklet that tells you all about those snacks and everything like that. Well, you know what? It tells you about all the common allergens that are inside those treats. So that way, when you're eating something, you know exactly what you're eating. You're not worried about eating something random or something that you shouldn't have. No, it'll tell you what you have in each snack. And that is one of the really cool things about this. So you get a box full of treats, a booklet that tells you what you're eating so that way you can be safe in case you have an allergy. And on top of that, you get some really cool information about Japan. And this month, you get to learn about ninjas. That is honestly one of the really cool things about this entire thing. I love it every single month. It is something really cool. Now, special for our listeners, if they use our affiliate link and coupon code featured anime at checkout, you get $5 off that first box. And trust me, it is worth it. I wouldn't be talking about it if I didn't believe in it. And trust me, the treats are worth it. So go ahead, use our affiliate link in the show notes, and then use coupon code featured anime to get $5 off that first box. If you want to help support us through other means and not get yourself some tasty treats, though I don't know why you wouldn't, you can buy yourself some swanky swag at shop.featuredanimepodcast.com. And of course, for all our contact information and how to reach us and everything like that, you can go to featuredanimepodcast.com. And now, on to the meat and brotatoes. Suzume came out in November 2022. It is a movie, and a couple of producers for it are Aniplex, Toho, JR East Marketing and Communications, just to name a couple. The source is an original. Studio for it is Comix Wave Films. Genres for adventure, fantasy, and romance. And it ran for just a smidge over 2 hours. Now, Suzume, basically, it starts with us following the main character, Suzume, as she randomly runs into Soda, who's a young man looking for abandoned areas. More specifically, he's looking for abandoned areas so he can find a lone door that will eventually open to let out a giant worm that causes catastrophe amongst the area. So whether that be a tsunami, an earthquake, or other natural disasters, it's usually linked to this worm in some fashion. Now, on her way to discover who she is and to follow Soda, because she recognizes him from somewhere, though she doesn't remember exactly where, she ends up getting kind of tagged along this adventure, and this cat-like creature as well that's kind of guiding them or kind of leading them across Japan, and they're chasing them down, and they're closing these doors, trying to basically prevent all these disasters from happening by closing these doors and locking them. This is, in general, a story of self-discovery, of growth, and for gaining answers to her questions.
True, true.
I mean, you're not wrong. You did everything short of the finale.
I mean, gosh, it's like this guy's been doing this for a while or something.
I know, it's talent. That's what we call it. Just raw talent.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like, I feel like I would honestly be a lot better if I planned everything out, but I ad-lib everything, which is a horrible, horrible thing to do all the time. So, God only knows what would happen if I actually prepared myself a little bit more.
I threw up talking points, but as far as being prepared goes, yeah, no, I'm all set. One of the things I thought was really nice, I watched the preview, trailer, and I was fully expecting kind of a bland show, kind of a bland movie, and thankfully I didn't see that. There was a lot of stuff I had questions about. I had to watch it more than once because it wasn't M. Night Shyamalan twists and turns and stuff like that, but there was a bunch of stuff I didn't quite understand, and one of the things was somehow in the plot, this girl was able to find a keystone and pick it up and then remove its ability to be a keystone.
Well, no. She didn't remove its ability to be a keystone. That is not what happened at all. What happened was the keystone passed off the responsibilities of being a keystone onto Sota. Like, so it made him be the keystone. That's what happened. That had nothing to do with her getting rid of it.
Okay. So they're not too far off the mark by calling these cats gods, right?
Yes and no. There's nothing god-like per se. They are special cats, but it's more so the keystone. Like, anything can be a keystone. It's just so happens that it's these two cats.
Yeah. Okay. And they made Sota into a chair, which turned him into a keystone. I mean, so
yeah,
again, you know, it's not that they were chosen for a very particular reason or whatever. It's just, that's just kind of like how they are.
It happened via circumstance rather than not predisposition. That's not the correct word. It wasn't planned. It just conveniently happened that way. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I was about to say, well, we don't really get a lot of backstory as to why these two cats were picked. We just know there's two keystones. There's like a north and south, and I use quotes around that because they kind of just move where they're needed. Because in the story, they do say that, I can't remember which one of them was moved because of like how the worm was moving. Okay. But obviously there is something a little special about both cats. Now, is that because they were keystones, they became special, or were they chosen to be keystones because they were special? Who knows? They don't really elaborate, but it's just because like Daijin can talk, and obviously like,
yeah,
that's not normal.
So yeah, true. Well, one of the things that caught me off guard was they said that the keystone would only be a keystone for a limited amount of time. And when I want to keep saying Sotomayor, but that's not it. The chair dude.
Yeah, so just call him Sota.
Sota, okay. The thing is, when Sota's grandpa was told that he was a keystone, he was like, well, he'll be here for at least the next few decades. Which kind of threw me. And he was like, yeah. And the explanation that I got in very, very abbreviated layman's terms was a keystone needs to be replaced every 100 or so years, essentially every few decades at the soonest, and a century or two at the absolute longest, that somehow, some way, the worm will eventually overpower whatever keystone holding it down is. And
that's not what I got at all. CJ, did you get that?
I was about to say, were you watching this dubbed or subbed?
Dubbed.
Okay, that might be a dubbed thing, because subbed, they don't say anything about them having to be replaced.
Yeah, they never give a timeline on it in general for it.
The only thing I remember, and granted, it's been like 3 months since I've seen this, but the only thing I do remember is they usually try to place keystones where huge tragedies happened, because that's a weak area for the worm to pop out, which is one of the reasons why one of the keystones was moved. But yeah, I don't remember anything about them having to be replaced.
Never specifically, at least in the sub version of it, talked about them having to be replaced, because that would have been a major question for me as well. But instead, the only timeline or time reference that they gave in regards to the keystones was that Sota's grandfather had mentioned that, hey, it's been a while since I've seen you, to one of the keystones, but that's about it. Right.
Yeah.
So the time frame for it doesn't really make sense. However, I guess you're kind of given a rough generalization or a rough idea as to who, or not who, but an idea of the Keystone's powers. And it's also generally a power of perception that others that they can have on others at the exact same time, whether that's how they are perceived and viewed by others, or how they can influence or force others to say something, whether it's their deepest, darkest secrets or otherwise, you know, to spill out whatever it is that they're harboring. And this is kind of elaborated about 3/4 through the movie. But this, by and large, is more so about Suzume trying to help Sota get to Daijin, who was the keystone. And what's happening is they are going through, or going to all these different doors that have been opened due to these catastrophic events, and they are closing them. And Sota is known as a closer. And so his primary purpose is to close these doors and prevent the worm from coming through, causing these natural disasters.
But what was this worm to begin with? Has anybody ever said anything?
There since the beginning of time underneath Japan, under the island, and its sole purpose is to cause catastrophic events. That's how I understood it.
Yeah, that's basically anything negative that happens or any sort of tragedy is due to the worm. That's how I understood it as well. And I was actually, when Jack and I were talking about this, in messages, I had told him, like, I had researched a little bit of this movie after we had done our episode, and I was kind of annoyed because I found a little bit more of it. But the creator's name, who is escaping me right now, he basically was making this movie to kind of address / put to rest a lot of people's resentments for the I think it was an earthquake in 2011 that happened in Japan that did a lot of damage, aka took a lot of people's lives.
The ninth and something, yeah.
Yeah, the Tohoku earthquake.
Yeah. And so this was his way of kind of addressing it with the movie. And so that was the worm also. Like that was a big significance of, like, yeah, the worm is what causes things like this to happen.
Okay. I mean, so here's where my curiosity lies. At what point in time would you consider the natural disaster due to a keystone? Due to the worm? Because if it's every time, then the closers aren't really doing that good of a job. But if it's only during specific outbreaks, then it's kind of... That makes more sense.
Well, I mean, like, to be fair, when you have a finite number of people with so many natural deaths or disasters or abandoned areas, and you have to cover quite a large area, I mean, like, can you say they're not doing a good job, or can you say they're doing the best they can given the few people that they have that can actually see these things happening, right? Because that's the other thing, is not everyone can see the worm. Not everyone can see these things happening. Not everyone would be able to see the ever after either, right? So these doors that would open and you could view it when you're viewing through it, you see the ever after. Not everyone sees it. Not everyone would be qualified for it. So I feel like you have to be a very select person or have very special circumstances to which you can see these things. So you either have to be born a part of the lineage for it, or you have to undergo a very catastrophic event that you survived and also be at the exact same time, be linked to one of those doors.
Yeah. Also, like, not every tragedy that the worm creates is him busting out of a door. I think it's the grandpa. It might be Soda who says it, but like some of them are just, the worm moving around underneath the ground and things happen. They're trying to stop, like, the island ending ones. That's their okay. real thing. Is like, yeah, if it comes through a door, it's going to destroy this city, this region, etc. So that's the main thing they're trying to stop. They can't stop everything.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of curious, though, because part of the chant that they use to kind of seal away the worm again or close these doors essentially was, we who have claimed these rivers and these lakes as ours, return them to you. Like, I'm again ad-libbing to save my life at this point, paraphrasing. But what, in my mind, what kind of power do the closers have to return something that technically was never theirs to begin with? Is it just like a spiritual shaman thing, or
probably? Yeah, that would be my guess.
Yeah, I think that it's them. It's just them channeling the power of someone else. Like, it's not their innate power that they're using.
Okay.
Because I think the chant has something about like the gods of the land or something. So I think they're using those to help close the door. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're also utilizing people's emotions and the spirits that are there envisioning them as well at the exact same time.
Okay. Are they visualizing the people of the past to try to rectify that or bring back the happiness? Like, for lack of a better way to put it, like a Patronus from Harry Potter, think of the happy things and all the negative stuff will go away.
Huh?
Okay, Harry Potter, there's Expecto Patronum to get rid of the Death Eaters. You think of a happy thought, you expel this energy that exudes happiness and joy, and it basically shoos all the bad creatures away.
I'm going to go off of what I'm thinking. I think it's more just like how you see the cats, the yin and yang, right? So they're using positive energy to kind of close out the negative. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times where the worm is popping out of as well is an area that has had loss, aka a lot of negative energy. So they're trying to overwhelm it with, again, the for lack of a better word, good vibes.
I have a question for y'all.
Mm-hmm. It's something that we kind of do on ours, but I'm shifting it. Usually we say, like, you know, favorite character, least favorite. I want to focus on one character specifically. What did you guys think of Daijin? Like, did you have any shifts with him? Did you him? Did you dislike him?
I took him as a trickster god, kind of, sort of, initially at least. Because anything and everything seemed to be neutral chaos, guiding you towards a point in time that was necessary to either save or destroy. Similar to, like, Jormungandr. The snake that wraps around the earth in Nordic.
Yeah, Jormungandr. You're right. Okay. Mm-hmm. The world serpent.
Yeah, the world serpent. So, that's kind of, now that I'm talking about it, kind of reminds me of the worm they're talking about. But essentially, I figured that this cat was fickle at best. It's like, hey, you picked me up. You freed me from being the keystone, so I like you. And the cat saw Sota and was like, you know what, you're kind of you're in the way of what I actually want, so instead of you being there to close the doors, you'll become the thing that holds the worm down, you'll be the keystone, so I can spend the rest of my life with her. And the cat ends up foolishly, in my mind, thinking that the girl loves him because freedom, and it's like, you're hurting me and stuff like that. And then the thing that got me, the thing I don't understand, and I'm hoping you'll be able to enlighten me, is when she admits her displeasure to the point of, like, I hate you, the magic seemed to just be sucked out of the cat. And I thought maybe it was just me seeing it at first, but then when she praises the cat later, he revitalizes himself in a fashion.
Okay.
Does that answer any part of your question?
Yeah, no, it does. Before I answer that part, Jack, what did you think of the Daijin?
I thought Daijin served his role as a plot mover perfectly. Meant to provide you with just enough angst, so to speak, to keep you going and to wonder what he's actually doing, but also at the exact same time, be there in such a way that kind of makes you question whether or not he is the one that's either opening the doors or just guiding them without actually telling you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I couldn't stand him. He was annoying as heck to me. Because at first I was like, he's just opened all this crap. This is annoying. And he was just talking in riddles. And then, yeah, you obviously find out later, you know, he was a guide. He was just a horrible one. And then to answer your question, Rick, about, like, how he goes back to skin and bones, kind of off, honestly, going off of something we mentioned in the pre-show, parasocialism. he was deriving his happiness from her. And as soon as she was displeased with him, it went away, which is why he went back to skin and bones like how he was before.
Huh. Okay.
All right.
So interesting. He just wanted to be loved.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, well, boo boo. Yeah.
You know, hey, I want to be loved too. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. You, yeah. Well, I knew that was his, they were trying to redeem him and it just didn't work for me. Like, right. I was like, oh, well.
So, Rick sent me an instant message saying, highlighting the sub saying Soda will spend decades now housing as a keystone, housing the gods. However, that still doesn't clarify whether or not they are replaced every couple of centuries or anything like that. All it basically says is Soda may have the opportunity to pull shenanigans like the cat did to him.
Yeah.
That's honestly all that says is like he will spend decades. No one knows how long. No one knows what that really means or anything like that. All that just means is that he's going to be a keystone for an indeterminate amount of time.
Well, I mean, it's the grandpa saying it specifically about
that. That doesn't mean nothing.
If you take it into the reason I sent that to you is I wanted you to take a look at it and maybe derive something out of it. But I guess that's what you derived out of it. That it's, even though it says Soda will spend decades now as a keystone housing the gods.
Right.
You're like, well, it's an indeterminate amount of time. Like, who knows? It could be centuries, even though it clearly says decades.
Decades doesn't mean it's literal decades, right? It doesn't mean under a century. You could say decades and have it well be over a century.
I'm going to play advocate for both of y'all because right. I could see both. So
right.
I definitely believe, because I watched it subbed and there was no mention of that time frame, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, he just means like that was just his measurement of time that he wanted to use, right? Oh, decades. But if all you watched was the dubbed, I could see the thought of, oh, well, okay, there might be a finite time since he said decades. But yeah, like there's no specific time frame, and who's to say he would ever break free? Because I mean, right. he was locked in. Like, if she didn't come and scream his name, like you know, any anime, he would have been frozen for probably the whole time. Which just shows to me that apparently cats are stronger than people in this anime.
Hell yeah!
Because the cats were just moving around willy nilly as much as they wanted to.
Oh well, to be fair, I mean, like cats have long since for centuries been worshipped as gods, right? True. So the fact that they would be gods or deities, as they would be considered, there isn't far from the realm of possibility, right? And so here's the other thing, right? Right. To play advocate or to kind of lend credence towards Rick's idea, right, where they're going to only be there for a finite amount of time. It would be more lifetime. So long. It'd be only there for a finite amount of time in terms of his normal human lifespan, the likes of which the Dajin wouldn't have normally, right? So Dajin, obviously far removed from the realm of normalcy, right? And could be considered a deity, okay? Sota is not a deity, so it would be stand to reason, right? If we're given the time frame, even if it's otherwise, right? Decades would be the literal meaning of his life because he was like 20, 21, 22, something like that, right? So decades is well within the realm of possibility for his normal human lifespan, to which he would eventually die, and a new keystone at that point would have to take its place, which likely would end up being the cat again becoming the keystone to lock in the worm, right? which is a very good possibility because it's not like he was able to transfer the powers of the Keystone. Because if that was the case, right, he could have just picked up another random cat, transferred the powers of the Keystone to that cat or animal, dog, have you, another person, doesn't matter, and made them the Keystone.
Yep.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. But again, it goes back to the cat being stronger or better, as you said, than a regular person. And it would explain why they called them gods of some kind. Although they also called the worm a god, too. So,
I mean, it makes sense. It's been around for literally like beginning of time. So,
yeah,
it's like a bad god. But
I mean, like,
not the good one.
There are no good or bad. They simply are.
Okay, Yoda.
Right. Don't hate me because I'm beautiful.
Goodness. But yeah,
it's not like it's trying to be bad. It's just doing its thing.
Yeah. It's again, chaotic neutral. It's not chaotic evil, but whatever whimsical thing it's going for at the time, other than of course opening the doors, if that's what it's doing, it might just be guiding them to potential openers because the seals have weakened. But even still, that seems a bit off to me. That said, how come she was able to see the worms and whatnot when the closer had to go through, like, I assume special training or have a certain lineage, or like, is it not everyone can see these worms? And to my point, only the grandpa in the movie, only the grandpa, Soda, and the girl could see it. I mean, right. The cats could too, but
obviously, goes back to what I originally said, which was, we're not given answers on that. We just know that they are told that they have that, or that they can't see it, you know.
Yeah, but I was
we're not given answers as to why they can see it. And like, you can have speculation as to, you have to survive a specific catastrophic event. Again, I'm repeating myself, but catastrophic event, or born into a lineage for it, which is why there's a finite number of people for it. We're not given answers. We just know that there are very, very few people that are around that can actually do that, right? That can be considered a closer.
No, I agreed with that. And I was going to try to say, expand on that as far as specifics go, saying something to the effect of, my idea was that in order to be able to see the worm or eventually become a closer, is either you or someone in your past would have had to go through a rather traumatic experience and be able to go to the ever after and return. And then my guess is her kids moving forward would be able to be closers as well. Even if she wasn't to marry or bear children for Sota.
I would almost bet certainly that she would end up marrying and being with Soda. She'd have those Soda babies for sure.
Yeah, I'm like, given how much she had to go through, it would make no sense that he's like, by the way, I've got a girlfriend in college, later.
Deuces. Next time on Cold Case.
I was about to say, I don't think he would have done that, all that walking at the end, if that was the case. He would just shot her a text, but
seriously.
But outside of speculation, the only thing we get is from the grandfather, which is that everyone has a door that links them to the ever after, but not everybody can see it. That being said, still that door is your door, which is why she like, when she first sees the door where she sees the Keystone, she already had a link to the ever after, which is why she saw, you know, the beautiful night sky and stuff. But when she tried to walk through, she couldn't, because she had already had and found her door, which obviously gets us to the wrap up / climax of the movie, is her, you know, going to get to find that door again.
Yeah.
So I have a slight theory that has been tickling my brain up until the moment you just repeated, or not repeated, but you brought back, like, the fact that she got to see through the door again. And she went through her door two total times in the movie, right? My theory, as off the wall as it might be, is that they're kind of in a time loop, meaning time obviously goes at a different speed inside and outside. But my guess, my thought is, because she was able to see her younger self and all that good stuff, is it possible, in your guys' opinion, that there is a time loop that preserves what's going on with the worm, with the cats, with everything there? And my evidence for that is everything seems to happen in regular intervals, and it would lead credence to every few decades or every century you have to redo the seal, because it's, in my guess, if you will, the cats aren't just old and the worm isn't just old. It's reliving a specific timeline that will repeat itself as a kind of curse in the ever after. Thoughts?
I'll let you go first, Jack.
Your silence tells me that's way off kilter here.
The only thing that I would honestly say in terms of that, it's not necessarily a time loop, but more so along the lines that the ever after is time absent, right? It is ever present in time for all timelines at all times. That's what I'm getting.
Okay. So she was able to see her younger self just like she could see her mom.
Well, she didn't see her mom. She thought she saw her mom, right? But it wasn't her mom.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. She realized what she needed to do for things to play out. Yes. So, yeah, it's like its own dimension that, yeah, does not conform to our sense of time.
Yep.
Okay. Sure. That, in my mind, seems just as valid, maybe a little more than what I was originally thinking. So, yeah. Yeah. Right. Now, did you guys have any ideas as to music scores and whatnot?
I thought the music was good. The music was there when it needed to be. I enjoyed it, and it was very well done, in my opinion.
Okay, I was going to say, I only really noticed one section of the movie that the music seemed prevalent. Granted, it was probably there before, but it was so subtle I didn't notice it. So
yeah, every time the worm popped out, it was more of like a negative /
menacing
kind of menacing soundtrack. And then the music played its part where different scenes called for different music. Sometimes it was more muted, sometimes it swelled. Yeah, I enjoyed the music. So
okay,
all right. I honestly don't have too much more I could really say on it. I mean, like, there's a lot that could be said on it, but I feel like at this point we would just honestly be talking around in circles. What do you guys think? Is there any key points or notes that you guys want to hit on that you feel like we're missing that need to be explored, aside from the obvious journey of growth and self-discovery that our main character Suzume goes through?
As far as me, not so much as part of the movie, but as I'd like to point out, because we didn't really touch on it, they paid their animators incredibly well. They had to, in my mind, because the graphics, the animation, the style, the pictures, they were breathtaking way more times than they weren't. So that shocked me. I wasn't expecting that kind of quality, and it was almost overwhelming and overshadowed the story for me.
Okay.
The only thing I had was, if I was Suzume's guardian, I would have been pissed. Okay. Right. Her ditching school and then not responding to my calls and texts. Hell no.
She was the realest character out of the entire thing. And even then she was just as crazy. Oh, a stranger with a nice car. Yeah, let's all hop in.
It's stranger, a danger, stranger danger. Yeah. Well, to be fair, right? She didn't want her hopping in there. She wanted her to come back home. Right.
Yeah.
So it's not like she said, I'm totally okay with it. It was more along the lines of, fine, you're taking me with you just so I can make sure that you're safe.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Ooh. One last thing. So you said yin and yang and stuff like that, and it makes sense. Whereas the white cat was probably for more focus on the good emotions, The Black Cat. Holy cow. They both, in my mind, both cats served their own ends, essentially. The White Cat wanted to be free and to spend time with Suzume. The Black Cat wanted Suzume to reject the White Cat so that they could both go back to what they were. At least that's what I got out of it.
And well, to be fair, it's not that he wanted the White Cat to be rejected because of this, because of the opposite in personalities. The Black Cat was like, bro, you have a job and you're skirting your responsibilities again. That's a no-no, and you're going to get punished is ultimately what it was. It's not, it's not that, you know, they were playing like, oh, well, I'm the good boy, good guy, bad guy, whatever, what have you. It's the, no, you're skirting your responsibilities and now you're going to get punished.
I mean, I get that too, but the way that they went about it, the reason why I feel like the aunt was the realest character out of them all is even though the quiet things that you don't say out loud to protect someone's feelings came through because the Black Cat was, I imagine, not projecting, but freeing the feelings to come out and be spewed forth so that Suzume would reject everything and shut down and the White Cat wouldn't have a choice but to go back and do its job. The second that it saw it didn't work, the remorse, the facial expressions of the aunt, the horrified, what have I just done, came through and popped so vividly and so well that I was very, very deeply immersed in the story at that point, which doesn't usually happen for movies for me. So that was incredibly well done. And I would like to point that part out.
Okay.
Other than that, yeah, I'm ready for a, I think I'm about ready for a score.
All right. So in the spirit of a guess first, CJ, on a scale of up to 10, how would you rate this?
This guy, he knows I go last on mine. I enjoyed it. I think it was good. I unfairly, but kind of fairly, compared this to Your Name when we did it, just on how much I enjoyed the story and everything. I don't think it was anywhere near that for me, because that was a perfect 10. But the visuals and the story were like enjoyable. I wasn't a huge fan of Daijin. The story wasn't like anything crazy. It wasn't hard to follow, but it wasn't like super intricate. So I would rate it a 7, which is what I rated it on our podcast. But yeah, like, it's definitely better than middle of the road. It's not like groundbreaking. I'm not necessarily in a rush to watch it again, but if I had like a friend who wanted to watch it, I'd be like, yeah, sure. Like, I'm down, because music and visuals are really nice. I just get over Daijin. And also Soda in a way, because like, communication goes a long way, man. And there's some severely lacking some communication in here. And the one person who did communicate a lot, the grandpa, he switched up real quick a couple times. Like, he was like, oh, yep, that's it. Nothing can be done for Soda. He's got to do this. And then 2 seconds later, okay, well, if you want to save him, here's what you got to do. It's just like, what's going on, dude?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, a seven for me.
Respectable.
All right, Rick, what about you, sir?
So, I'm going to do a bit better than a 7. I'm not going to go to a 10, because I can't. There was a few flaws in there that I wasn't too thrilled of. And one of those flaws in my mind was the, as you said, the interactions. The lack of consistency and the lack of reasoning for the consistency switching. I'm going to have to go with an 8. I would recommend it to somebody. I did watch it multiple times. It's very, very, very engaging in my mind. Because every single time, even though after the first watch through, I knew what was going to happen, it still got me. It still hooked me, and I was still looking for things I missed. And there was a few things I missed on the first go around that I caught. And yeah, the story seemed very genuine, very unique. The writing seemed to be decent as far as the dub goes. I didn't watch the sub, so I don't know the comparisons. The animation quality is beautiful in my mind. And the music was subtle and when it needed to be, and it was very well done. It was very well done. So I'm going to give it an 8.
Okay. For me, I am going to give it a 1. It was truly appalling. It was trash. It was horrible. Never want to watch it. No, honestly, I kind of gotta agree with CJ on this. I kind of give it a 7. There's a lot of questions in there that I really wish were answered, given more information on it. The breakneck speed at which the grandfather kind of switched his gears on it, I really didn't like it, detracted from me. In general, I felt like Soda was not listening, despite the fact that he was told multiple times by Dajin that he was the Keystone now. Despite him being told that multiple times, he still didn't comprehend that he was being told that. The in general poor character development, I feel, overall for him, I feel like attributed to that. The lack of information with them dropping a bomb about something major or something that's happening and then not talking about it and then not providing context or more information on it kind of really detracted from it. That all those negatives, aside from the fact that the animation was great, the music was wonderfully done, for the character growth and story development that it was there was really well done. The fact that they had the character growth in general progressed the way that it did, despite its shortcomings, I felt like was done very, very well. And they did help provide resolutions and a closed circle, so that way you knew the beginning and the end, so that way you had that proper context instead of you being left in the cold, so to speak, wondering what the hell did I just watch or what was the meaning of that entire beginning portion of it. They at least circled back and provided that closure for it. And then they also provided the context as to why Soda looked familiar to Suzume. And it's because when she was a child, she saw Sota when he was an adult. And she just had that repressed memory.
Hmm.
So next week, if you guys have no, nothing else to add or change or anything like that?
Nope.
Nope. I agree. That was the one thing I forgot to say, but you mentioned it. Yeah, there was just too many questions not answered. So, yeah, that was another reason for the 7.
Yep. Perfect. All right. Next week, it is a recommendation from Jeb, the Idol of Idaho. What we're going to be watching is Oshinoko, which is, according to them, is it's epic and dark. It's also based on a manga, and season 2 will be coming out later on during the year, hopefully. So that'll be next week's choice. Well, I think that's all the time that we got for the day, guys. Unless you want to add anything else before we drop off really quick, CJ, drop some more knowledge on us about you, where we can find you and how people can become associated with Anime Anonymous and Crazy Jam and all his wonderful streaming habits.
Yeah. If you guys ever want to join one of the streams, again, you can follow me on twitch.tv/crazyjam and Wednesdays at 8:30 Eastern Standard Time, like PM. Artsy and I, the wife and I, we do our recordings for Anime Anonymous. This one that's coming up is going to be the movie Promare. But yeah, every Wednesday we record those, and then it gets released on every podcasting platform Friday mornings. So yeah, if you ever want to go to an AA meeting that actually feeds that addiction, we got you covered.
Sweet. And of course, for anything revolving around yours truly and Rick for the Featured Anime Podcast. If you want to hear some of the pre and post show that we usually do, mainly pre show that we usually put out with every single episode, most of the episodes, kind of sort of episodes, you can go to patreon.com/featuredanimepodcast. $1 a month will get you access to that bonus content. And if you feel so inclined, to buy yourself some nice, delicious treats and get yourself some culture while you're at it. Don't forget, you can get yourself Tokyo Treat. If you use coupon code Featured Anime, you get $5 off that very first box. And trust me, those treats are worth it and they are delicious. And if you want to help support us through other means, you can go to our shop.featuredanimepodcast.com, buy yourself some swanky swag. And of course, all our information and all that wonderful stuff is available to you in the show notes, as well as on our website, featuredanimepodcast.com. And until next time, I'm Jack.
I'm Rick.
And
I'm CJ. Sorry.
and we'll catch you next time.
Yeah, see you next time.
You're good. You're good. You're good. You're good.
I was sitting here. I was like, do, 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 do. That's their normal thing.
Jeez.
You're good, man. Right on. Hey, well, thanks, dude. That's I feel like that was a pretty good stream, pretty good episode. I mean,
the feedback might have been a bit much.
You know, I mean, like, we'll figure it out later. I mean, like, it's okay. It's all right.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I was going to mention in the show, but I was like, I'll just do it in the quote unquote post show. If y'all remember, you know, when they're having their dinner, and Suzume just plops on down on Sota as a chair.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I was like, that's sexual harassment.
Yeah, it's a chair. It's an inanimate object. I mean, like, if that leg accidentally went boop, no one's going to complain.
I figured if you thought that was a bit odd in the dub, I don't know if it did it, but in the dub, she's standing on him and he says something and she goes, "Don't worry, you'll like it." I'm like, what? When did this happen? Foot fetishes all over?
Yeah, yeah. No, I was just like, Artsy and I were just like, where was she sitting? Huh? Is that his face?
Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, if you remember when he's in the like locked up and chained up, I was like, I know, but it's funnier to think it's his face.
I mean, it wouldn't be far from the truth.
No, I mean, there's a very small chair, so
yeah,
it is.
And she keeps kissing the backboard, so
well, she only kissed it once. She only kissed it once. All right.
Every other
She kisses it multiple times. That's how she wakes him up.
She was about to kiss him once, and then he woke up, and she got a little flustered about it. Well, twice. Right? Yeah. So.
Yeah, I was about to say, I remember at least two or three times, because he's like, what did you do to me? And she was like, nothing.
Yeah, and then the last time when they wake up, she kisses and hold him. Yeah, so, yeah. Yep, yep, yep. I gotcha. Before they, quote-unquote, break the ice, so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one else is weirded out that he's almost like a full-fledged teacher and she's still in high school?
No.
Well, she's 17, he's 21. So it's not that crazy.
I mean,
yeah, he's studying to be a teacher. He's not an actual teacher.
Them having a teacher student teacher relationship, honestly, is really not that far fetched either.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, you look at anime, like, for instance, now granted, it's more of a joke, but look at one of my favorites, Horimiya. The teacher there is actively saying how much he loves young women. Yeah. So
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. And a long time ago, I remember, Rick, you and I, we had a discussion about this very particular topic, about the age of consent, at which point people are allowed to be in a romantic relationship in the age which is acceptable, and it is far younger than here in the U.S.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, so, in my mind, a general rule of thumb is divide by 2 plus 7. That'll keep you
out of jail. That's too much math.
Bro, keep it simple. Don't try to bring math into this. Keep it to realistic facts, not
right,
realistic people's facts. Opinions. Facts. All right.
I mean, technically, it's facts. Divide by 2 plus 7. If you're 20, the youngest you can legally go would be 17. And that's assuming you've had a pre, you were like a family friend or something like that.
According to what state law?
California state
law. Yeah, I was about to say, there are some states, and like, it's crazy how much you learn, like, in Insta comments. Because, like, I'm scrolling through something, and in some state, I think, like, you can legally, like, get married or whatever at, like, 16. Which is crazy to me.
Some are, but then also the legal age, regardless of consent, is 18, right? So, again, that rule does not hold true, Rick. I mean, like, you have to go with the state's laws, not... Well, it feels good to divide this by 2 + 7 or whatever it is. And then you can legally, according to what state, depending, right? Because
According to Google, the state of Maine age is 16.
And according to Google's, California is 18. So you're already in jail, sir. There you go.
Fair enough.
And they don't have a close in age exemption. Right. Arkansas is 16, Arizona 18, Alaska 16, Alabama 16, District of Columbia 16, Louisiana 17.
Alabama being 16 not surprise me.
I don't know. Wyoming 17. Again, depends on it. And some states have a close in age exemption, right? Where it is like kind of like, okay. California does not have a close in age exemption.
Some states have.
It's called
a. Some states have it if your parents sign off on it. Like they.
Yeah.
It could be super young. Like it's. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's
the Romeo and Juliet clause isn't a close in age exemption. Romeo and Juliet clause is you were dating before one of you became 18. That's the Romeo and Juliet clause.
Yeah.
That's what you're referring to.
No more than 3 years older. And at least 14 years of age.
So again, depends on the state, depends on the circumstance. True. There's no blanket statement. Right. There is no general rule of thumb. If you divide by 2 and add 7, you're okay. You're going to be safe. No.
That's what I was told growing up. That's what I went with. Granted, I'm far older than 20, so it's never really been an issue for me.
Right. But. No, that comment that they told you about is how to not be creepy in terms of people that are quote unquote socially acceptable in dating age range. That's what it was.
Yeah, and it also changes with time, right?
Exactly.
Like time frame. People got married with huge age gaps back in the day, young back in the day, you know, it's just arranged marriages and all that stuff, which are still practiced in certain areas.
Yeah.
But like my last thing, cause I know it's late for you for sure, Rick, is I scroll through TikTok every now and then. I actually find myself scrolling on Insta more than I do TikTok, which is hilarious to me. But, there's this one creator, Tony something, like Stavochi or something, and it's like talking to his grandma. He's like, "Hey, grandma, how did you and grandpa meet?" He's like, "Oh, such a romantic story." Like, "Oh, really?" He's like, "Yeah, your grandpa kidnapped me." He's like, "Wait, what?" He's like, "Yeah, you know, my dad and mom just really didn't want me to be with him, so you know, he kidnapped me." He's like, "What? So what did your parents think about that, grandma?" She's like, "I don't know, I never saw them after that."
Oh no.
He said, "Grandma, you're a victim."
There's still wanted signs, and she's on some kind of milk carton with a computer generated age up.
Oh, that would crack me up, man. It's hilarious. It's like, because he just went off the deep end with it. Cause like, yeah, you know how certain people met back in the day is just crazy to this generation, but like he just went full bore.
Oh yeah.
You're a victim. That kills me.
Oh man.
Oh, yeah. Although You're going to like this. Well, you might like this. There was, at one point in time, there was a law in Texas that stated that a married woman under the age of 21 can purchase and consume alcohol, whereas her husband, who is not of the age of 21, is not allowed to.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Just get married just so that your wife can go get you beer.
Hey, hon, I need you to go grab beer. We're having another seniors party. Yeah. Not senior citizens. We're still in school. Come on now.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right, guys. It was fun. It was a good time.
I appreciate Indeed. You, man.
Thanks for joining us, sir. Take it easy. And hope you guys have a great night. And catch y'all later.
Yep, later. See ya.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.